Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 131 of the Van Hemlock Podcast.
By Omni Consumer Products.
What?
I want a sponsor.
You want a sponsor? What, just so you can say a cool brought to you by thing at the start or for the money?
I want the cash.
I want the cash, okay.
I want the sweet, sweet cash.
Sweet, sweet cash. Maybe you need to start experimenting with PayPal buttons and things.
Don't trust PayPal.
Put the tax burden on our poor listener.
That's a bit mean.
Shall we
talk
about...
Haven't they suffered enough?
Well, yeah, I'm just surprised we don't have to pay them, frankly. Yeah. Shall I talk about some games I've played?
Oh, go on then.
Just to, distract people away from this awkward, uncomfortable revelation about cash.
Okay.
Yes. I'm going to start with Warhammer Online.
Oh, is that still going?
We're still going, yes. There's
nearly Christmas, you know.
No, we had two groups. We had to split it into two groups because there was, at least, eight people there. It was brilliant. It was wow. This was almost like the glory days when we started. No, we're still going. I'm going to keep going. And I'm quite enjoying it. I had to level up a zealot, though, because we had a week where we had three tanks and no healer, which was quite exciting.
Okay.
sticking two fingers up to the Trinity, as it were. No, we spent most of that week just zerging around the open RVR where it doesn't matter how many healers you've got. You're still going to get steamrolled.
Healers don't help.
Well, they sort of help, but the whole, dynamic of keeping a functional unit going... one or two healers per six people and then distributing the healing around. That just goes out the window completely in a 24-man Zerg made up of entirely random classes. So, in a way, you don't need to worry too much about the trend. I suppose as overall you notice if you haven't got enough tanks or you haven't got enough healers, but generally you just charge on through and hope for the best. And everyone's still getting used to the new system with all the new flags and resource carriers and aerial bombing and stuff. We're getting very good at the aerial bombing. We've learnt a good tip there, is that as soon as you get on the Manticore, map the bomb button to hotkey 1 instead of shift F10 or whatever it usually is, which is quite tricky to spam because you've got to hold and then press, and you've still got to be moving the mouse around and tilting the camera to...
And if you've got push to talk,
yeah, exactly. So yeah, map the bomb button. You can remap the bomb button as you're on your way out of your keep well before you get to the enemy area and just drag it across into the 1 slot. Then you just keep pushing 1 all the time and keep mouse roughly over the enemy. I've burnt so many people to death with that bomb. It's brilliant. The trouble is, it's a very limited window of opportunity. Only when the keep's at rank 3 or higher, and then between that point and you winning the battle.
And them noticing, don't go outside.
Well, eventually they'll notice, and then you get a large number of bright wizards and shadow warriors trying to plink you out of the sky. Had to go down in flames. Yeah, the whizzing noise. Tell Daphne I love her. Going out. Yeah, it's terrible. And of course, when that happens, you land on the battlements, and they're all quite cross to see you. They're not pleased to see you.
No,
because you just...
I don't want to congratulate you on your good flying.
Shake your hand, no, because you've just spent the last 10 minutes dropping extremely powerful fire damage over time on top of their heads whenever they go near their cannons.
That's just me.
I know.
Can't you all just get along?
Afraid not, no. I mean, once we... Yeah, in between getting on those, we've been playing the game normally and properly and stuff. It's tricky. It really is tricky because I think there's a Zerg mentality there. I mean, people have been playing this game religiously for the last 3 years or whatever, and it is very, very much in the open RVR a case of just find the big train of your people and hook on the back because might makes right, and the more people you've got, the more likely you are to win. And then suddenly you've got to hold down 4 different control points at once and also guard 4 different mobile NPCs at once and at the same time be defending or attacking keeps as well as whenever the opportunity presents itself. And so that kind of distribution of forces does not happen instinctively. It's not something people just naturally go and get on with. I mean, I've started to just go to the nearest flag to the home keep and just try and keep on it, keep sending resource carriers. That seems to work. But on the whole, you've still got this large sort of Zerg that will throw itself against a keep that they are physically incapable of doing anything about until your own keep has got to 3 stars. And it's, I just like to do a public service announcement. If your keep does not have 3 stars, get the hell away from the enemy keep door. Thank you. There we go. It's a problem, yes. And it's even worse when the people who are charging at that door, they can do nothing about, are slagging you off for camping flags. Duh! Hello! Clearly you missed the memo. Yeah. It's terrible. You know, no. You're supposed to camp flags. That's how we win. Yeah? See those little bag things moving around the map? No, get the hell away from the flag, dude. It's like, yes. I've had some interesting exchanges with my pickup group warband healer. And I think a lot of people are idiots, and it's just reinforced.
I've noticed that people are idiots.
Reinforced my... something I've noticed is that, right, we have this current state of affairs, and this isn't just a Warhammer thing, this is everywhere. Pickup group healer who has a guild tag is not there to help you. No, they're just killing time. See, if you've got a healer who's got no guild tag, and they're a very rare breed, then they might agree to assist you, help them get something done. But generally, we've got this state of affairs where, for the last 1,000 years, healers have been joining pickup groups and being sworn at and shouted at and subjected to a great deal of hatred for not keeping crazy, aggro, stupid DPS guy alive. And what's happened is that most people have decided, screw this, I'm off. So we end up with a situation today where a required component of the Trinity is in danger of becoming extinct, certainly in a pickup group basis. So you go to your guilds for your healers and so on.
I've got a message for pickup groups.
Yes.
If you slag off the healer and I'm your healer,
yeah,
I am currently at that point having great fun watching you die again and again and again and again and again. Sometimes I'll keep you alive long enough to make it funnier when you die.
Oh, it sounds like a bitter healer rant, but it's, you know, it's just sort of stepping back and looking at the whole thing. You know, look, here's your tanks, here's your healers, here's your damage. You know, the stupid Trinity that we've had to grow up with and have learned to deal with. Why not just give everyone a self-heal? Yeah, problem solved.
If D&D can do it,
well, exactly. We're not past it yet, but basically, yes. So I'm thinking, in this day and age, with available, willing, and cooperative healer, you know, non-gilded healers as on the verge of extinction, we want to be being a bit more kinder to them, I think, and not just, you know, swearing at them for not supporting you in your one-man DPS crusade against a keep door you can't do anything about. So yes, I'm enjoying Warhammer quite a lot. I've worked really hard actually over the last fortnight getting my zealot up to the tier 3 warband, because with the patch they jiggered all the brackets about again, so I've had to do a bit more work, but I'm now eligible for tier 3 after a bit of a struggle, and can join the main hipster battalion warband.
Huzzah.
Yes, exactly, in the capacity as a healer, which is interesting enough. I don't know if I'm a good healer or a bad healer.
Do they keep dying?
They keep dying, but we end up in situations where no amount of healing will help, you know. This is another fundamental misapprehension about the healer's role. You know, if there are 5 of you, one of them's a healer, and you charge at 25 of them, that healer's not going to keep you alive. It's just basic maths, you know. you need at least 5 healers, probably, and even then you have stacking problems with
but
similar
I've
buffs.
But I've got a healer behind me. I'm invincible.
Yeah, one healer is not equal to 25 incoming DPS. Yeah, that's the basic numbers we're talking here. We did Mount Gumbad, the final wing of it.
Okay.
The big ramp down the middle. Gumbad's the big sort of dungeon underground zone of PvE stuff, full of different public quests. And we did all right there. We worked our way down to the bottom. Me as healer as well. I was helping out, although, to be fair, I rocked up with my zealot to find that 3 of our goblin shaman were on that week as well. And we only had one tank. but luckily Zozo showed up as well. So we ended up with 2 tanks, just about. With 4 healers, so you know, you just can't win. I'm gonna have to go away and roll. Oh no, I've got a tank. That was my main character. Yeah. Yes, there we go.
You're not rolling a new one each week, are you?
No. But I did think about that. Yeah, I might have to roll a DPS, because a couple of weeks prior we only had like 2 DPS in a warband of 12 people. So I've just never got. I mean, it's ridiculous, and I feel myself almost at the point where, coming to a new MMO, I'm gonna have to roll 3 characters at the start and routinely level the other 2 to match whatever any of them have done. Just so that I've got the right thing available to help get a thing done. It's this stupid Trinity. Death to the Trinity. Yes.
The Trinity sucks.
It does. It's ridiculous. We need more hybrids. We need more flexibility, respecs, whatever. I've rant about this a lot, and I'm going to rant about it again, so get used to it, people. Yes, we did Mount Gumbad, got down at the bottom there. There was this big, giant, huge... I mean, you know what a squig is, yes?
Yes. I'm well aware of what a squig is.
You're aware of what a squig is. It's a small sort of... I don't know, creature with a mouth and evil eyes, and it's about the size of a beach ball.
Can be the size of a beach ball?
Can be, yeah. We got to the bottom of this middle path of Gumbad, and we found a whirly which contained a squig the size of a house. Yeah. It was crazy. I'm not quite sure what went on in there, because it all got a bit complicated. Next thing I knew, we were up at the start anyway. So I think possibly it was a wipe or something like that. A wipe, which it was my personal fault, because I was a healer. I couldn't heal them all. I can't.
You can't save them all.
Can't save them all. I know. I'm learning a lot about how the other half live. But I think, to be honest, I'm going to probably stick with the tank in future gaming. Still going, though. We did a bit more RVR. I'm really wanting to get going on Tier 4, but they moved the goalposts up so bloody high. I'm wondering if we're going to get there, to be honest. But I think, you know, there's the willingness still there, but we're going to have to do a lot more Tier 3, which we were just about ready to move on from.
So why do you need to do a load more Tier 3 then?
Because, well, you get a bolstering buff in the open RVR areas, but that's only applied if you're within bottom and top level range for that area, and then that bolstering moves you. I tell you, the one thing that this new thing's done with these moving the goalposts about is that we're starting to see deadly level 39 enemies in PvP, purple names, you know. Now, if you'd have seen that as a monster in the wilds, you'd have run a bloody mile.
Yeah.
You would not even attempt, you wouldn't expect to be able to kill it. And yet you're seeing, like, you know, fives and sixes of these enemy players with just such a hugely higher level than you.
Yeah, stand coming a chance.
At you. I know, you literally don't stand a chance. You need lots of you versus one of them, and that kind of thing. Presumably there are destruction 39s bombing about in the open RVR as well, so I suppose at least half the time it's going to suck if you're order as well. But I just sort of really do question the spreading of these brackets, because it's created such a vast disparity, which apparently was a massive problem in Tier 4 with the Renown ranking, and I think they just shifted the problem down a bit to all the lower people. Still, when we do get to Tier 4, it means there will physically be no one of a higher level in that area, because everyone is level 40, I suppose, in Tier 4 now. Yeah, pretty harsh stuff. But I just want to see some new stuff, new things, try some new... I mean, we had a go at most of the public quests available in the Tier 3 pairings and so on. Perhaps when we get to the sort of low 30s, mid 30s, we can just go to Tier 4 to do the PvE, and then come back to Tier 3 if we want to do some open RVR, do that sort of thing. Because they haven't rebalanced any of the PvE content. That's all still the same, broadly 10 level bracketing. Well, yeah. So all the PvE stuff available in Tier 4 should be coming up for us soon. I mean, most of our gang are around level 30 or so. I'm sort of low 20s, but I've got some ground to catch up with my Zealot. My Chosen's still of a fairly high level, though. I mean, yeah, I'm beginning to just wonder if... You know, I'm getting quite militant and reactionary about the whole Trinity. I've decided to just start saying hell with it and going for it with like three tanks. You know, let's all turn up as wizards, yay! And then just sort of bombing around in solo content, I suppose, where none of us would be under any threat anyway. It just infuriates me, and all the time, you know, we haven't got enough of this, haven't got enough of that, too many of this, I need to level one of those. I can understand why, say, endgame people in World of Warcraft or whatever routinely level up about five or six alts, because, you know, in the high-pressured precision environment of endgame raiding, you can't get away with just bringing, you know, let's bring 12 tanks and see how it goes. No, that's not going to work.
12 hunters, see how it goes.
Well, exactly. Play a bizarre kind of aggro tennis during which one hunter dies every pull.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. But no, you got to do it the way they've designed it, and to hell with whatever you wanted to be as a class in the first place. I'm going to talk about a different game. We played some card games in EverQuest 2.
Ooh.
The Legends of Norrath cards. That we had a good old go at that.
Is it more geeky when you play a collectible card game in a computer game?
In a computer game using voice chat, yeah. I don't know. It's questionable. It all sort of came back to me a bit. I said a little bit of homework to have a go at the tutorial each, and we all did that, and then we all had a go. Sort of had a go at the lobby system. They got like unranked, just casual matches and little chat rooms where you set up card matches against other people. So we all trooped into there. Turns out there's about 16 people on the entire server playing the card game at the time we were playing it. And I think four of those were us. So not
popular.
Terribly popular, no. I don't know what it is, whether people just don't know it's there or don't care or give it one go and were absolutely bewildered by the tutorial, which, you know, to be honest, you take one look at that UI, I was having trouble following it myself, and I am super intelligent. So I'm wondering what hope most people have.
Well, if the normals can't do it,
it's, I don't know. It takes a lot of practice. Yes, you can step through the tutorial, and that's fine. You get to the end of it, but then you're left thinking, right, now what? And you know, sort of random game against an impassive, uncaring stranger, you know, across the interweb.
All strangers are passive and uncaring.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be the best environment to be learning this stuff. They got a series of single player against the computer sort of scenario campaigns.
Oh, to teach you how it should be played, not how it is played.
I don't know. And apparently some of those, at the very far end of those, give out little in-game cosmetic cloak rewards and stuff. I heard people talking about those. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not terribly enthralling.
And they're bribing you to do the tutorial.
No, this is not. No, this is the sort of campaigns, the single-player stuff, which, yeah, I mean, why are we bothering with that, you know?
Yeah.
For starters, you're in an MMO. And also, yeah, this card game, it's supposed to be played for two players. Anyway, so we had a couple of one-on-one games. That was all right. I think Asgar there has a basic, in far more practiced understanding of card games in general, so he was doing very well. And Sven seems to be a natural as well. Me and Torek were not doing quite so well. But, yeah, you could set up 1v1 friendly games with no bets or stakes or whatever. And I think you've sort of wager cards against each other, like with Magic. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how the tournament stuff. We were too scared to go anywhere near it, to be honest. But yeah, and then they got raiding in the collectible card game.
Wow.
I know. This was mental. It really was. Right, what you do is there's four of us versus one computer opponent.
Yeah.
If you imagine like your card play area with all the different things in it. We got four of you along one edge, and the computer is along the other edge.
That doesn't seem very fair.
It's not very fair at all on us, because this computer has a ridiculous number of hit points, and it has an incredibly overpowered, broken deck it uses, full of very gimmicky quests and interlocking creatures that you have to work your way through. I mean, to begin with, quests are placed on the table, and you attempt the quests, or you attack the player. That's how the basics work. And you attempt the quests with little quest points that appear on some of your action cards, your ability cards, or whatever. So you're sort of playing actions to contribute towards quests. So you put enough little pips in the box, you win that quest. Hooray!
What does that give you?
You're a quarter of the way to winning the game.
Ah.
You win. If you win four quests, then you win the game. Or if you just attack him with your creatures and stuff, you take all his points off, then you win the game as well. Well, for starters, the enemy was invulnerable while a certain type of creature was in play, and there was about five of these things all on their thing. Every single quest, the quest sort of appears halfway between two players.
Yeah.
So two people on the end will work towards one quest, then the two people in the middle have a quest each, three quests. If you imagine it sort of straddling across, there's three quests. Anyway, all these quests will do 2 points of damage every turn while they're on the table to the enemy. That's us. So, yeah, for starters, we're all subject to this horrific damage over time to begin with. And it really did sort of, I thought, yeah, this really is a raid, isn't it? You know, we've been hit by this massive damage over time that we've got to deal with very quickly, and we need the right gear and the right deck for.
Did you use all of your cards which you used to reverse the damage? And stuff?
I had no idea what was going on at all, to be honest. It started and then it took turns. I had a go. It had a go. One of our lot had a go. It had another go. Kept putting creatures that stupidly boosted each other. It was quite obvious, sort of very early on, that in order to get anywhere with this, you have to unravel it in a very specific order. You have to deal with one sort of card so that the other sort of card doesn't do its thing, and then that card can be removed, and that means that thing. And we'd had no idea what we were doing, to be honest. I got eliminated within about three rounds, and the others weren't much far behind me. And it was sort of fascinating being on voice and watching it all going on. You can spectate on other people's card games if they're left open. So, you know, when we were playing one-on-ones, the other two of us were watching and so on, shouting and heckling, all that. But this raid thing was ridiculous. And yes, obviously this is not something brand new players is meant to be able to do. You're supposed to build up a deck full of very expensive cards from their little shop, and also learn to play might help as well. But, I mean, initially I was very annoyed, and then I just got like into this state of hysterical not caring and giggling a lot, you know. It wasn't an awful lot of fun, to be honest, for me. But if you like the card games in general, I think this seems like a fairly solid one. But I don't know, all the while I was just sitting there thinking, yeah, but I'm playing EQ2, I should be out there killing monsters, you know. You know, the whole thing appears in this massive window, and your character is still in world, just standing there, you know. I don't know if you get a little tag over your head or whatever. I don't know, I'm kind of thinking that if I want to play a card game, I'll go and play a card game, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas this is EQ2. In general, EQ2, I'm about 35 or so, my guardian there, the tank, pottering around the Enchanted Lands, doing a bit of crafting. There's nothing big that I'm looking forward to, like I am in other games, you know? I don't know, it's hard to describe, but I just don't see a real purpose to any of it in EQ2. I'm just there, I'm just pottering.
You're not working towards anything.
There's no big goal, there's no, I got to get to this level so we can do a thing, or, you know, this, that and the other. I mean, there's dungeons aplenty when you get to the right levels, so you can go do those, but I don't know, and I'm leveling up a crafting profession because there's a progress bar, mostly. You know, it's nice to be able to make my own armour, and yeah, it's just something all along that's not really been grabbing everyone about EQ2. You know, I mean, we've put a lot of things in the forum about various different games, and various different people are joining various different static groups, and the EQ2 one's not terribly popular. And it just sort of makes you think, well, yeah, just because the thing's free doesn't necessarily mean you should be jumping on it and playing it all the time. I don't know. I mean, so I've sort of reached a kind of, that'll do for now with EverQuest 2, you know. I've sort of informally hung up on the static group, as it were. I mean, I've got the character. It's a free game. You can never quit. So, I don't know. But there's just so much else I want to be doing. Other games that seem to grab my attention more. So
that's what I'm going free-to-play isn't really enough.
You've
got to have a good game.
And also, if you're going free-to-play because your subs weren't very good, that's a remedial action. You still have a cause out there somewhere.
Yeah.
That's, you know, trying to address the symptoms. You still need to do something. And probably the main reason people weren't playing your MMO wasn't because it was a sub, because people pay subs to play other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Up to and including World of Warcraft. You got to think, well, no, there's something else, isn't there? I don't know. I mean, I've always said it's a functionally very solid game. It's
just a little soulless.
Just a little soulless, yeah. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, probably not really going to be doing much more with EQ2 for a while. I mean, I'll pop in here and there, I suppose, if the rest of the guys want to organise a big dungeon thing. But otherwise, no, moving on a bit there, I think. It's just quite difficult getting enthusiasm. And, yeah, exactly, the looking forward. There was nothing really, yay, I can get to level 80 and then what, you know. I mean, you know, usually you've got something you're looking forward to. Warhammer, I'm looking forward to Tier 4. And Land of the Dead, which is something I particularly wanted to see. That was their sort of Egyptian Tomb Kings themed bit, which I did want to see and I'm looking forward to seeing. I mean, yeah, obviously when you get to Tier 4 and find out, oh, it's just like Tier 3, then the sheen might wear off there as well. But, you know, LOTRO, I'm looking forward to my nights in LOTRO because we're redoing all the big story again, or our original group's got the big story to finish, you know, that kind of thing.
I put it to you that this whole not having anything to look forward to is actually not wanting to play. They're the same thing. It's not there's nothing to look forward to, you just don't want to play it.
Well, I don't want to play because there's nothing to look forward to. It's, yeah, well, for whatever reason, I suppose, I'm getting a bit bored of EQ2. Yeah. So there we go there. I've conversely been finding myself playing a bit more Guild Wars again.
Wow.
Yeah, lately.
How many are you up to?
Huh?
How many are you up to?
Oh, the calculator. Oh, that's stalled at 20. I mean, from here on, it's going to be some really quite lengthy and painstaking stuff.
So you're not good enough.
I'm not good enough yet. I'll be good enough by the time Guild Wars 2 comes out, obviously, because I'll have an awesome, like, 60 out of 50 score by then. And, you know, Rainbow Jellyfish, that'll be the least of my absurdly inappropriate Ranger pet minions.
For the class you're not going to play.
For the class I'm not going to play. Exactly. That's going to be great. No, we've been doing more of the War and Kryta, and we've gotten up to, well, it's just a sort of coincidental thing. A couple of us all arrived at the same sort of place in the storyline, and the next bit after that is quite a difficult groupy bit, so that was good. Because, yeah, where we left it last time, they'd patched it to put a big overriding quest in to guide you through the War of Kryta, which broke all of our individual progresses and made it all made me just rage quit, really. But they've fixed it, so that was good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I logged back in earlier this week, and the quest now reflects accurately all the bits I've already done. So there was obviously some muck-up at their HQ arena net there, but it's all good now. So, yeah, we ended up on the final stage of the War in Kryta, or at least the penultimate stage. I'm not quite sure. No, it's the penultimate by one. The Temple of Tolerance is under attack by, like, white mantles and mersatses and whatever. None of this can mean anything to you if you don't play.
Not at all.
No.
I was just thinking Temple of Tolerance. That's
a great name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. We went traipsing out there to liberate it from the white mantle. And it was a really tricky mission, actually. It's very much a sort of capture the top of the fort type of thing. You snake your way around the level, and then you get up on the top. And there's the boss, and you think, well, that'll be easy. And except it's spawning a really high number of patrols. So every time you take a step a bit near it, suddenly you get blindsided by a group of about 8 plus 20 28s, which is pretty hard going in Guild Wars. And yeah, they just kept coming as well. Every time we thought, I mean, we got almost wiped. Yet another fantastic death run recovery routine from Malty there, who's our resident revivalist expert. There ought to be a whole class in Guild Wars 2, I think. Just one a whole skill bar devoted to picking everyone else up after they bollocksed it up. That
told you would make that
a number of different reses, each with different ranges and conditions. Yeah, so we got in the end of there, managed to do it just about in the end. Hard work though, and I'm surprised, you know, that there's I don't know, maybe we've been getting a bit complacent with some of how easy the previous stuff is, but that last section is pretty difficult. We got one more to go as well, the final assault on lions. Oh, there was a brilliant mission as well. I think after that one and before the penultimate one, there's one where you start in an outpost and have to leg it across like three or four overland zones, all the while being chased by an unfightable number of very harsh monsters. And it's sort of, you know, I imagine a lot of people will get that wrong first off. They'll turn and try and make a stand. No, you've got a couple of NPCs you have to escort along the way as well. And basically, you're just legging it back to the capital because the massive invasion forces behind you. And it really is massive. So after a couple of times where the NPCs, they got stuck on scenery and we all got slaughtered, we came up with a fantastic team build, which is basically everyone just dumps all their skills and goes with either fallback, a paragon elite, which it boosts everyone in earshot's run speed by 33%.
Does it stack?
No.
Oh.
No, the run speed, that. But also, charge is the warrior elite, which does the same thing. And basically, there's like four of us all running along, doing a round of these shouts. So every time it looked like it was the progress bar was about to run out on one of these shouts, someone else would do one. And we basically bellowed our way from point A to point B.
You ran across the continent screaming.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, charge. And yeah, because when some of these shouts are actually shouts. The little character will say the thing over their heads when you use them. It's great. So charge and fall back. Yes, that got us through. And anyone can do it as long as you've got those elites. There's a number of other skills there. Anything with a 33 run speed buff that has a very fast recharge rate, that's all you're looking for in that mission. Nothing else. So we're now parked just before the Defend Lion's Arch, sort of penultimate, the big capital city stormed by the big monsters type of situation.
Okay.
So interesting to see how that goes. Definitely interested enough to see that to the end. And apparently, if you can do that, you then get access to oppressor weapons, which count towards the Hall of Monuments weapon rack. Yes, there had to be a monument motive there somewhere. But yeah, we should have all that done fairly soon. It's a nice touch, nice touch. I'm looking forward to seeing what the factions' Winds of Change linking questline is going to be all about. And I think by the sounds of it, I don't know if they're going to... See, the thing with War and Crytek is that it was a sort of... coming back to the subject of hype, it was a teaser thing that ran for a number of weeks where they'd add a little bit each time, which is why it never really had this overarching quest thing until now. Because, you know, now after the event, everything's all in there and you can do it all in one go, which is much better. I don't go for the, I must come back every week to see this next tiny incremental piece of plot. I'm going to wait until it's all there and do it in one go. So hopefully the Winds of Change thing, I don't know, I imagine they'll string that out as well.
Yeah, of course they will.
Why are you fiddling with dice there?
I'm just fiddling with dice, don't worry.
Okay, fair enough. So, yeah, it's a sort of... I mean, I've got my ongoing epic quest to try and capture every elite skill in the game on the go. I'm probably about three quarters of the way through that now, and so the bulk of the hard work's been done, but some of the ones that are remaining are pretty damn hard.
The ones that are too hard for you to have got so far?
Well, no, I've been doing them alphabetically because you need a system. There's like 140 of them, unless you know, all mixed in with the normal skills, of which there's about 300 as well. So you've got to have a system, you know, a bit of paper with what you've done and where you are.
Was there a point on the scale for this?
Yes, well, these the whole lot will contribute to the eternal skill hunter of whatever, Cantha. I think you get three points for the three titles. Well, the three titles which will count towards the middle rack monument, of which I think I need five more to get that. I don't know. Is the answer there. I hope so. But this is, I don't know, this is me just doing it anyway, because I was working on this Skill Hunter title long before this Hall of Monuments thing ever showed up, so it's for my own satisfaction. Got to catch them all, and I intend to. We've been playing Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Yeah, the Hobbit and Crescent, the Next Generation. We've been doing some stuff. I missed this week, but the previous week we were doing book one, I think. I can't remember. We were all charging around the Old Forest and Hobbiton and Buckland, meeting Tom Bombadil, and ultimately charging on through the Barrow there, Orthongroth, And yes, I just about got it done. We got it done. Then it turned out that one of our member had forgot. You know what I did wrong the very first time we did it, the first time through? I accidentally forgot to take the quest. Someone in our team did that this time as well. Yeah. So we had two goes at the last Great Barrier thing. That instance is a lot easier than I remember.
It killed us repeatedly the first
time. It was just stuffed full of elites. I think this is going to be a running theme with this whole Lord of the Rings revival.
They numptied it up.
Us bitching about how easy it is nowadays. But no, seriously, it's all signatures in there now. You could solo that last step. Book one, chapter 11. And I remember Turbine coming out and, you know, saying that most people never got past that in the epic story because they were soloing. This was before the Inspired Greatness thing ever was dreamt up and put in. And what they'd done prior to that was just make book one, chapter 11 soloable. So we charged in there and we just... in our usual rambling style, didn't really need any kind of group work or group coordination. Six man soloed it effectively and got through and done. And we did it twice, and I just got to the end fight on the second go through, and my internet died. So I'm not sure what happened after that, but
they all died, never played again.
Oh, yeah, like 20% of a signature mob's health left, and the minstrel disappears. I'm sure they'll be fine. So this week I didn't make it, but apparently it was Great Barrow Night, the first of the proper dungeons, which does have group stuff in. Apparently it's different now. It's got three sections.
Yeah, they split it up into three sections so that you do the first bit, do the second bit, do the third bit and get keys.
Because there was a lot of business with keys last time through as well, and we got confused and lost, and it took about 5 hours and we died horribly. So I don't know. I think there's some post-mortem reports on our little forum there in the Hobbington Crescent thread, but... I didn't get to do it, which is a shame.
Well, next time.
Yeah. I set everyone homework to get level 20 to 25, and I didn't make it, so I don't know how everyone else
I'm still
did.
Level 14. I'm paid for Fortnite.
You know what? I'm not going to set homework anymore, because that just is stupid. It's basically... this whole thing should be fun. It should be hanging out with friends, having a laugh.
Yeah.
So whatever levels, and we work with whatever we've got on a Friday night, you know? I'm not going to force people to get so many hours in during the week, because that's just stupid, really. And also, I prefer my guardian to my minstrel. I've been doing a little bit of work with... well, did you want me... I can have my Endereth rant now.
Oh, go on then.
Yes. Well, I dug out my guardian, who turned out... who's now premium and now cannot fast travel.
Oh.
No swift travel. Although, now I can. It's confusing. For some reason, Turbine... Codemasters, more specifically, have done something wrong with early accounts. And I got sent an email saying, you've been granted VIP status until December the 23rd or whatever, because you need to log in with each of your characters because some premium people had not been being given premium perks correctly or something. I wish they'd stop doing this to me. This has happened to me twice now. EverQuest 2 had their gold weekend, and I used that opportunity to not need to pay them anything ever again. And now Lotra have done it as well, so I'm loading up on quests in regions I don't have quest packs for. I'm using Swift Travel to get to everywhere I need to be, etc. Till the end of the month, where I'll go back to premium again, apparently. But yeah, I got down to Enedraeth, the bottom edge of Eregion, you know, where there's a little sort of wooden hill fort there and Mirabelle and whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you can now swim across the river into a brand new zone.
Yep.
Yeah, and I crossed the river and I thought, oh, okay, you know, hills and trees, etc., etc., etc. And then I took one look and I thought, is that Badger level 65? It was a wolverine. Yeah, badger, wolverine, whatever.
I think
a small, scrubby animal, you know, sort of about the size of a house cat. Level 65? What? You know, I mean, it's a novelty to see anything my level after trogging around Moria with a lot of grey mobs and so on. But, yeah, you know, level 65 badger. Strange. So I thought, all right, I'll give it a go. Had a bit of a fight. No, okay, I'm all right. I've got some decent gear.
You're also level 65?
Level 65 myself. It was an even level fight against a solo mob, and I've got some fairly reasonable gear. You know, we did a lot of grinding in the Grand Stairs in our day, so we got some reasonable armour. And I thought, oh, okay, that was all right. And then next thing I go trundle along through the hedge up over the bush, and I look, a Dunlending. I know about them from the books, them the people that live in Dunland. They're like the swarthy hill cavemen people that turn up at Helm's Deep or something. And I thought, oh, all right, okay, we'll have a fight with him. And he was level 65, yellow mob, level 65. And I'm sat there, and I'm thinking, if you and your mates just decide to have the wherewithal to head north a bit, you could probably wipe Rivendell off the face of the earth. So I kept that to myself. Yeah. Obviously, I don't want to give them ideas. So, okay, carry on. Oh, you know, it's still only dropping like 30 silver as loot or whatever, 12 silver. Up over the hill, and... I'm not sure what I'm looking at to begin with. And I thought, oh, that looks a bit sinister. I get a bit closer. It's a goat. a mountain goat, a black mountain goat with red eyes, of a category type ancient evil signature, level 66. And I'm just thinking, I'm done with this. I'm done with this game. I'm going. So I just turned around and I left Enerdreth because I refuse to believe that after everything my character has been through, all the trials, the tribulations, we've journeyed to Rivendell, we've helped Frodo along the way from behind the scenes, we've fought Ringwraiths, we've fought Nazguls, we've driven off all kinds of... I had a run-in with the Watcher twice and survived. At the far end of Moria, after we basically single-handedly helped the dwarves reclaim a massive, massive underground citadel from uncountable numbers of orcs, we find ourselves in Lothlorien. We're having personal conversations and tea with Galadriel herself. Then we have to spearhead an assault across the river to pacify Mirkwood and assault Dol Guldur, presumably, which I personally didn't survive because we never got it together for the raiding on that. But presumably, at this point, a character's life, they've come away from Dol Guldur, beaten Dol Guldur's caretaker or whatever, you know. And here I am on a hillside staring at a goat that could solo the Grand Stairs. And I'm just thinking, no. Have I played an MMO before? Yes, and I played too many. It was just a really... I don't know. I mean, it's such a trivial thing. You're looking at you giving me that look, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm giving you that look.
Yeah, yeah. But it just... You know, I've never, ever, ever had it so laid so painstakingly bare how ridiculous level escalation in MMOs is.
I always get this from about level 2.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, that goat could destroy Rivendell. You know, I don't think... I mean, Elrond technically doesn't have a level, but everyone else in it, you know, the guards, the vendors, etc. You know, here is a badger that could destroy Thorin's Hall, you know, wipe out the Shire, and not pause for break. And I'm... I couldn't take it, honestly. I just left. I mean, as far as I could tell, Enerdreth's a pretty variegated region of a temperate variety. It's very large, about the size of the North Downs, I suppose, looking at how far I got on the map and stuff. I made it to an outpost with the first horse point, and there's a whole bunch of rangers, the Grey Company, who are heading south, probably, to join Aragorn around about the Helm's Deepy sort of time. But... I talked to one of them, he's got a couple of quests, and surprise, surprise, two new forms of collectible currency I can stuff backpack with. I just thought, oh God, not more bloody tokens. Do you not take cash? You know. So yeah, you got these like gold marks of the rangers and silver marks of the rangers. It's just, I don't
know. Have you not played an MMO before?
I've played too many MMOs, John. I don't think I can do this anymore. It's not, I mean, the whole introduction to Enerdreth was basically me deciding that MMOs are stupid. So I went off to Forachel. I even set my milestone at the big city in Forachel, that's Sura Kuli or whatever it is at the top there with all the igloos and stuff, and I decided I'm going to live there and I'm going to be a proper hero in that I am vastly more powerful than the monsters that the people are hiring me to fight, and there is no question of my success. I will get the job done. The people who I am getting these requests from are incapable of fighting these monsters and also much less powerful than me. In other words, they couldn't go and do it themselves. So... and also, they're promising me trinkets, which I no longer want, which I neither want nor need. I'm just here to help, you know? And I'm rep grinding a little bit, and yeah, some of the knickknacks they give out are quite interesting cosmetically. But yes, I'm basically doing grey quests in Forachel because I just want to help.
You've retired.
I've retired. No, I've become a proper hero. Because all the way up from level 1 to level 60, you're always taking on quests that could go 50-50 each way. Well, nominally anyway. I mean, behind the scenes, they jigger it so that you're most likely to win. But you know, you don't want a hero who is going to be challenged by attempting to solve your problem. You want a hero who's going to solve your problem without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
And the whole of MMOs makes no sense whatsoever, and I've had enough. So I've gone to Forachel and just going to potter around in the snow there, killing you know, polar bears that are like 20 levels below me and stuff, just because I'm helpful. Until we reconvene and attempt to do more of the story, where I shall probably grumble bitterly. Yeah, so that's been my Lotro, really. A kind of retirement, yes.
I have nothing to say to that.
I'm not really getting into the... I mean, I've got my minstrel, my level 20 minstrel, and who's making a huge amount of money by just harvesting resources and selling them. Forget any other crafting, my God. Yeah, I just don't really want to work through all of the North Downs and Lonelands again, because that was pretty harsh the first time through, wasn't it?
It's quicker now.
Yeah, I hope so. It's been streamlined. Yeah, but I've got to pay extra points for the privilege of working the Lonelands for the next month.
No, the Lonelands...
Lonelands is going to be free,
Lonelands is free, because no bugger was buying
you
it.
You couldn't give that away.
Exactly, no. They couldn't give that away.
Lonelands is a harsh, bleak place that's meant to be harsh and bleak for narrative purposes, but there's no place to spend... every sort of third night, 2 hours grinding on monsters. No, you want to get through there as quick as possible. So, yes, there's also my other secret project MMO. There's going to be an Operation Cheap Seats in next week's topic show. So I'm doing the research for that at the moment, playing some of that.
I better play that.
Don't want to talk about that at the moment, but I'll give you all a clue. It's a free-to-play title. Say no more than that. But, yeah, so I've been doing some of that. I want to talk about my console experiences, which has been mostly Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, which is a fine, fine game.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know what to say, really. I don't know what to mean. Very good, very good. I mean, you can buy it as standalone. You'll probably want to buy it if you've played Assassin's Creed 2. It is literally a continuation of the story. Like Assassin's Creed 2 weirdly starts the moment Assassin's Creed 1 finishes. This one starts exactly the same time as the Assassin's Creed 2 finishes as well. So it's absolute continuation of the story and picks up lots of the loose ends and moves on. The opening couple of levels are quite on rails, really, aren't they? They're quite cinematic. They're sort of establishing. It's quite clever what they've done. On the one hand, you've got a tutorial. There's a sort of tutorial feel to it all, teaching people who've never played 2 how to play the game at all, which is good. But also, at the same time, it's very exposition heavy. You don't have a lot of choices at that point. It's not really open world there at all.
It has a reasonably good reason for why you lose all your gear as well.
yeah.
Occasionally, you do have to take all your gear off. There are certain things you do that involves getting undressed. And when you have to get back into the action in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's quite good. I found it was a fantastic introduction to it all. It's sort of rollicking adventure yarn that eventually dumps you out in the open world playground that is Rome.
Yes.
Which is a huge city.
And a gorgeous city. Rome looks better in the game than I think it does in real life.
Well, I did at the end of Assassin's Creed 2, I spent a lot of time on Google Earth looking around the areas, and it's a fairly well laid out Rome of the period. A lot of the major landmarks are more or less where you'd expect them to be. Interesting. I mean, I'd never been to Rome, so I didn't know what to expect, but good fun. Is Rome always that ruined? That was the thing I was getting a lot of. I mean, yeah, the sort of backstory is that the Borgias had really run the city into the ground, and it's just mismanagement. But ruins everywhere, obviously Roman ruins.
Well, the Roman ruins are still there, so odds are they existed in the time between when they weren't ruins and when they were ruins.
It's like the northern... North.
Don't forget, you're not that long after the earthquake, which destroyed a lot of the Colosseum.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to have destroyed a lot of stuff.
It's interesting. I mean, you are stuck in Rome. You don't get to visit any other cities. Well, there's a few out of...
You get to go to a couple of the other cities.
Well, they're sort of on-rails extra levels.
Sort of on-rails missions.
Yeah, missions. But largely, you're stuck in the same one city for the most of your gameplay. But it seems to manage to be interesting and varied throughout. There's different districts. Quite a bit of it seems almost open countryside, fields and so on. So you're sort of talking the Greater Rome District or whatever. Interesting missions. There's lots of interesting new stuff to do there.
Yeah.
You get to build up the Assassin's Guild.
I like that. Although it does make it awfully powerful towards the end.
Oh my god, yeah.
This morning food just gesture. He's dead.
Later on through the game, you get to start recruiting people to become your sort of your Assassin's Guild. And I don't know, most of that's conducted through an interface that players of Evil Genius will find familiar. You get to send them on a menu-driven odyssey throughout the world, during which, and then you wait 10 minutes and eventually they're available again, having either completed or not completed their mission.
Did you ever have a single failed mission?
No, never.
Neither did I.
No, they always managed it. I don't know if it's possible to fail it. I mean, if you get a success chance based on how many of the people and of what level.
I was usually sending 70 to 100%.
I was just filling it every time. It took a little longer to get them. You see, your minions sort of get XP as they successfully complete these missions, and are also available in world as a kind of uber special attack.
Basically. You get three different groups that you can summon on a cooldown. So you're wandering along, you can say, attack that group of people, and one group of them jumps on them and kills them. They just appear out of nowhere.
It's great. They sort of climb up nearby rooftops onto the top, or they'll gallop in from the edge and suddenly, wham!
Or just come out for hay bale, like he's always been there.
He's good.
And also, once you've got all three of them, you've got this arrow storm thing.
Oh, my
thing,
God, that's which you can so use broken.
To clear vast armies were.
I know, basically, you've got all three flags available. If you hold down the left trigger, the left bumper long, you know, for a few seconds, an arrow will come off of edge of screen and hit every single guard that's in view.
I've seen it described as a smart bomb.
It basically, that's how it functions, yeah. Too many guards, hit the bumper, boom, everyone's dead. It's incredible. So, but yeah, eventually they sort of rank up, and they even get... I love the little ceremony when they get to the top rank. You go through this little cutscene ceremony and promote them to proper assassin. Once they get to that level, they can just deal with most guard groups in one at a time, you know. It's crazy.
Did you notice it in that ceremony, and especially with the person who goes through the ceremony later when they become an assassin?
Yeah.
He cuts their fingers off, like in the first game.
No.
The thing in...
No. That's explained in Assassin's Creed 2. They just brand the finger.
Oh, is it?
They don't cut them off in Renaissance times. That's only in the Middle Ages.
I thought he was just being mean to everyone, including the person.
No. You sort of brand your thumb, sort of ring... it's all good stuff. Lots to do. I mean, much of the format from Assassin's Creed 2 is replicated. You've got the hidden layers for the super armor. That's all dotted around the city. The truth thing is there as well. You have to use your eagle vision to scout out particular landmarks.
And this one has chess puzzles.
You find yourself doing all sorts of logic puzzles and, you know, this, that and the other, just to try and unlock these hidden fragments from Subject 16. But the end of that is incredible. And
I need to do that.
You need to finish that, because that it's not just, you know, a bit of clip of, you know, of CG film or whatever like it was in the first one. It actually I don't know, because
does it make the end make any more sense?
It makes the end not quite so harsh, I'll say that.
Well, I assume that the end isn't as harsh as it is, because I assume that's going to get rectified.
Well, it's a hell of a cliffhanger. That's all I want to say about it, really. I don't want to spoil it for anyone listening. But yeah, working through the sequence of memories right up to the very end, and you end up with a surprising amount of Desmond time in this one.
You do.
I mean,
loved the just going out. You end up in the villa from the second game.
Yeah.
You're there in modern times.
Yeah.
And you've got that entire town, and you end up going there, and there's cars and stop signs.
Modern road signs and things.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's very clever, yeah. Yeah, I mean the sort of denouement to the whole thing. The end, the last chapter is basically Desmond rather than Ezio. You sort of reach the end of Ezio's memories, and I don't know if there's going to be any more Ezio, or whether there'll be an entirely new character, or what happens after the end of that. But interesting.
I don't know. Well, there will be more Ezio because there was Altair in two.
He's only alluded to. There's like one level where
there's one level with him. Then he has sex, and then you have the baby.
Which theoretically ought to mean you should be able to access Templar genetic memories, since you're half and half. Anyway, interesting.
What if I take that, Rick?
Maybe, who knows? Although that is the multiplayer, isn't it?
Yes.
I've had a go at the multiplayer.
The multiplayer is genius.
It is really clever.
What would you do if you had this technology? Well,
the backstory for the multiplayer is that you're all Abstergo agents. You're not assassins at all. And you're in this giant room all being trained by Dr. Vidic there, who's like, it's hinted throughout the main single player story that Vidic's off doing something else, and this is what he's doing. So it turns out that you're all training up to become assassins in this giant hall, and that's why there's so many of you all sparring against each other rather than one person being a hero. And what happens is that pretty much everyone, you know, the sequences when it's where Altair makes an assassination, it goes all wibbly and he's just there with just them. Every one of those people you've put on the floor like that is an available multiplayer character. So basically, for multiplayer, you're all evil, which is awesome. I've had a few goes of that. My second ever go, I topped the board. I was the best at, which never happens to me in console multiplayer. I'm usually the charity case that people bring along because we like you, you know.
Need an extra gun.
Yeah, exactly. And for somehow, basically, the way it works is, right, you are given a target. I think people have described the ship.
If
anyone knows what that is, it's very similar to that. Apparently, I haven't played that.
I played it a bit, not very much. I didn't really get into it.
So you pick your character. Everyone picks their character, and you appear in world, and you look around, and the world is made up entirely of copies of the 8 types of multiplayer character. And there's hundreds of them, and it's brilliant, very clever. I just had no idea.
And
how do you do stealth in multiplayer? you hide in plain sight. You make sure that everyone else in the world is you as well.
And all of the NPCs walk funny. They'll suddenly run a bit. Or
they use very similar sort of crowd mechanics as they do in the single player game. They'll stand in clumps. They'll move around in clumps that you can hide in. And of course, you look like one of them as well. So to hunt, you're given one player to attack, you know, to chase after, and you'll get a compass which will point you roughly in the right direction, but then just disappears when you get near enough. So you have to use your own observations and try and work out from people's movements, from what they're doing. You know what they look like, but then a whole load of other people look like that too, and often there'll be three or four of them sat on the same bench. So trying to work out who your target is quite tricky. Then you have to, you just get near enough, mash X,
yeah,
you've made the kill. But the quality of the kill is the important thing. I mean, if you just charge after someone with a dagger out and wallop them as you see them charging off after someone else, you'll get 50 points. If you casually saunter up behind them and just wallop the blade in one they didn't even see you coming, you get about 400 points. There's like a super...
If you come out of cover behind them without them noticing you and stab them, I think you get 800 points.
If you just stand on a bench, you know, just sat on a bench and they walk nearby and you stand up, wallop, done. 800 points. So you get a ridiculously higher score by being subtle and stealthy. Yeah. Yes, you can charge around and just stab people like it's some kind of first-person shooter.
And people, every people game do. I've played, people are doing that, just wanting to...
I know, you're sort of sat there on a bench, you know, incognito, watching...
Run a bit closer this pass.
Watching three people just... parkouring it up across the roof and walloping blades at each other.
I need to unlock one of the ranged weapons for that.
And then you just sort of casually stand up and boink, dead.
Yeah.
And that's how I managed to end up top of the score table in the second ever go at it. I don't know, it just seems to gel with me a bit. You know, I'm never good at, no good at first person.
I've had problems where I've been sitting there, three identical people on the bench. Yeah. They just wandered over, killed me, knowing which one I am.
Yeah, I think there's ways to, well, that's just informed guesswork, I suppose, up to a point, but you lose points for stabbing non-players, yeah, you know, or you don't get the points or whatever if you just start laying about into civilians. So it's just a massive adventure playground, and then you have the stealth element as well.
My favourite kill was actually against a guy I wasn't meant to be killing, another player. He was just sitting there in a hay bale, and I just walked past and thought, I wonder, and stabbed it.
It's people like you that ruin the game, yeah. You're not supposed to just randomly stab hay bales. You need a motive. But yeah, every time I've played it, I've only played it a couple of times, but it's been just really good fun as well.
Yeah.
It's quite absorbing, and in a way, it's just really satisfying to see these gung-ho heroes charging about and getting last on the table.
I've had some quite harsh games where everyone has been incredibly better than me, and no one's really messing around.
And
those get a little disheartening.
Well, there is a place for running, though. You get this escape flash-up if someone gets very near you, so you get a little bit of warning, but not much. And there's a stun move as well that the clever people use once they get near enough, which can stop you legging it. But you do need to leg it if they are on top of you, and it's sort of legging it and then breaking cover, which is a bit like the single player game, but sort of you've also got the added danger of like five other people out there somewhere who are watching everything,
who notice you running a bit crazily.
I think I'm going to be playing a lot more of that, and I hope I hope the Thursday group all gets a copy.
Very few of our friends seem to have it.
Fair enough.
But I'm sure there are people out there. I know there are some people out there who have it. And
you've got challenges in the main game as well. That's quite good. I find myself doing a lot of those in the sort of later stages.
Yes.
You're clearing up the loose ends. Obviously, at the very end of the story, a thing happens and you find yourself back in the Animus and can carry on playing with the world to your heart's content, which is fine.
Who were those two people?
What people?
At the very, very end.
I think we might have to discuss this after the show. Right. But once the story's finished, you can still carry on charging around picking up loose ends. I didn't like the stupid vehicle levels. Leonardo's in this one again. He's working for the Borgias, but manages to slip you some information about where all his death machines are.
He's just a bit of a turncoat, really.
I know, he seemed a lot more distant in this one, because you were like best buds in the previous one.
This one, he's working for the bad guy and actually giving him stuff.
Yeah, but he's given you a list of where all of his death machines are, and you have to go off on these various out-of-the-city missions to various places to go and deal with them all, and it's basically just an excuse for a chain of vehicle levels, most of which I didn't get on with, to be honest.
The
boat one was all right, but mostly because the ships were just stupid and it was easy to exploit.
The tank one was a bit boring.
Tank one was very hit and miss. I only just got that one. And the flying one, I just died so many times. It's just ridiculous. Well, no, I didn't die. It's the moving targets kept getting away.
Yeah.
Because I was just really not in control of that thing.
The horse at the end was really hard.
There's the horse-drawn cart makes a reappearance, which I that was a bit easy, to be honest. You know, you had to really muck it up to get that one wrong. But yeah, so there's quite a lot of different. I like the parachute. Which is
parachute. Yeah, you've got a parachute now.
You show me that. I hadn't got that far yet, and I saw you whip that out. I thought, oh my God, are you playing Just Cause or what? It's crazy. But yeah, all the usual gadgets are there, the knives, the daggers, etc.
Crossbow now.
You get a crossbow now because the throwing knife now no longer one hits for some reason. So you have to use the crossbow instead, which will. That does make it all a little bit easy, to be honest. Although, an interesting thing I've seen, it was the 50%, 100% synchronization thing.
Yes.
Each of the tasks you do, both in the main story and the side missions as well, typically has a bonus objective now. You know, you'll have to kill six guys because of some reason or another, and for 50% synchronization and for 100% synchronization, you have to kill them in a particular way or doing a certain thing.
All without being discovered.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty much everything you do in that game will have an extra objective, a sort of hard mode.
That's a nice way of...
I like that. It's replay.
Yeah, it's a nice way of appealing to the guys who just want to storm through it, as well as the people who want to craft their kills.
It did make me quite antsy and anxious very early on when I realised I wasn't able to hit them all first time. Yeah. I just find myself going, oh, I want to do it perfectly, damn it. But then I thought, well, no, hang on, let's just play through it and enjoy it and relax and do it at my own pace. And then I've got something to do later on, because rarely enough, I have actually bought this game. It's going to be with me forever, or at least till next year. So yeah, but good stuff. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing.
It's a very good game.
Yeah, I'd recommend it most wholeheartedly.
Release the next one soon, please.
Yeah, massive fanboy here, I think. Looking forward to what happens next. So, and that's about it for me, really. I haven't played much else.
54 minutes.
That's supposed to about let you talk, really.
Yeah. I've actually not played that much. That's balanced out quite well.
And Assassin's Creed Brotherhood was one of yours as well.
Yeah, so we won't talk about Assassin's Creed. Let's start with Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia?
Yeah.
This is the film of the game of
No. This is Sands of Time.
Oh, okay.
I got it on PS3 because they've released it as a HD update.
I inherited that with your old Xbox, and I still haven't completed it. There's this one particular puzzle I keep coming back to every couple of months and having another go at and then swearing at and not playing again. It's terrible.
Well, they put it on the PS3. They made it look a bit better. Mm-hmm. The resolution's upped.
They always look quite good to begin with, I thought.
They've added trophies.
Uh-huh.
And it crashes all the time.
Oh, God.
I know.
What happened?
It just crashes.
Just crashes. Yeah, you don't expect that with a console.
Crashed.
That's why we go to consoles, because they don't crash.
It's a 6, 7, 8-year-old maybe game.
Oh, dear. So a bit of a rush job.
Yeah,
on the port,
I don't know. So I'm sort of holding off on that now until there's a good patch that fixes it.
Okay.
So I hope there will be.
Well, yeah.
There's Gran Turismo 5.
GT5. I don't want to start you off on that, to be honest.
No, I've been getting on with it a lot better.
All right.
It is still the world's best ever, ever, ever driving simulator. Hmm. It's just not the world's best game and not the world's best racing simulator.
So there are some nuggets of awesome in the centre of that mess. It's just getting to them.
That's what annoys me so much, I think.
Mm, it's not just not just a bad thing you can walk away from and forget.
No, it should be so much better. It's stupid mistakes.
Oh, well, look out for GT6 coming soon.
Yeah, true. He's said that they're updating it with patches, so maybe they'll fix stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm having great difficulty with the AI at the moment. It just does not know how to race.
Yeah, this is that weird sort of team orders mode you were...
Well, just and in the actual races themselves.
Oh, but, I see.
They do spend an awful lot of time using highway patrol takedown tactics on you instead of
it's
racing.
Like they don't want to win, they just want to stop you winning.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, so I'm not going to swear about it this week. But,
all right.
I still think it's a 9/10/5/10/1/10 game, depending on what bit you're looking at. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Okay.
Which is the Criterion-developed Need for Speed game. Criterion, of course, famous for Burnout.
Yes.
Looks very much like a slightly more pretty Burnout Paradise.
Slightly more pretty. I always thought Burnout Paradise looked very good. Mind you, it's that whole focusing on the centre of the screen problem, isn't it?
It does look very good.
I rarely park in Burnout and look around.
Well, you can always make things look better. It's basically point-to-point races of different types.
So they've not really gone with an open-world roamy sort of thing.
There's an open-world roamy mode, but that just allows you to open-world roam. They've missed the thing I liked about Burnout, which was you were in the open world, and then you went into the events. In this, you're selecting the events off a map, so the open-world bit has no real use apart from a couple of trophies.
Mm. I do think Burnout is Burnout Paradise specifically is work of genius. Yeah, still.
But a lot of people didn't like that. A lot of people did not like the idea that you had to, when you lost the race to start with, there was no restart, so you had to go back.
You had to drive instead all the way of back not realizing. That was quite annoying.
You just took the nearest race to you when you finished.
You jump on another race. Yeah, takes you back across.
Yeah, the weird thing about this game is it's not as good as Burnout Paradise. It just doesn't feel as complete a game or as big a game or a game that's going to keep me playing.
It seems like quite a restrictive format after Paradise. It's literally an open world.
It's a very narrow area of gameplay.
Here is a set of races. Off you go.
Yeah.
We sort of expect more now.
If it wasn't Criterion, then I wouldn't be expecting more. But because it is, and because it looks so much like Burnout, all the time I'm playing, I'm thinking I want to be playing Burnout.
Are we likely to see a Paradise type sequel somewhere down the line, or are they going to go with these Need for Speeds?
They've had open world versions of Need for Speed.
Okay.
Whether or not they'll do that in the next one for this, but you see, there's a bazillion different developers now doing different Need for Speed games.
Yeah.
So you've got Shift, which is a different team, which is the realistic racer. Hot Pursuit is the Cops and Robbers one, which is developed by Criterion, and then there's an MMO. So I don't think there's going to be enough crossover between them.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's more than a little disappointing. It's more fun than... it is fun, and it's great. It's really enjoyable, and the online races are quite good, unless you die really early. Then you just end up sitting there watching for 10 minutes as everyone else races. But, yeah, it just seems to be lacking that something. They lost something. They missed something.
Mm, okay.
Which is a bit of a shame, really.
So, recommended or wait for the next thing?
I don't know.
You're not sure if I can recommend it. That's a recommendation in itself, really, isn't it?
It's fun and good, but yeah, it just seems missing something.
Yeah, fair enough.
Then again, all games are missing something now, I think. What else did I play? Let me go.
Oh, there's a lot of Brotherhood achievements in there.
I know. I completed Brotherhood.
I got the parachute one off the top of the big castle.
That's a long climb.
It's a tricky technical climb as well, getting up there.
Might be easier to do on the mission before they've put up. The first mission you go there, it's all very easy to get in. The second mission you go there, they put metal barriers everywhere so you can't climb. It reminds me of trying to deal with skateboarders. I resubscribed to Eve.
Yeah, you're playing Eve again?
Yes, I haven't actually done anything yet. I've just resubscribed.
It's a preparatory thing.
Started training the skill for the new ship.
This is the your salvage, I think.
The Noctis, I think it's
called. Another skill book to take on board.
Yeah, it's not a hard one.
Fair enough.
I've trained that one up now. when I looked on the day of release, the ships were going for hundreds of million. I think they're down to 50 now, but I'm sure they'll go to less than that.
They're not NPC supplied, are they?
No.
No, there's blueprints.
Yeah, the blueprints.
Just lots of people.
Blueprints come from ore, and then so that means that they're a bit hard to get hold of. You have to deal with 0.0.
Cloud ring and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Lots of people making them, though, bringing the price down.
Oh, they were out and sale all over the shop within
hours.
Presumably
they're Tech 1 and don't require any exotic parts.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, fair enough.
So they're going to be quite cheap in the end.
Good.
Then there's Age of Empires 3.
Age of Empires 3.
It was on special for Games for Windows on one of their deals.
Okay.
For something like 10p, something stupid like that. And I bought it, and I then lost all of yesterday to it.
Back that up. You're endorsing Games for Windows.
I never had a problem with Games for Windows.
You're about the only person.
I only use my PC for
you're not a PC
games
gamer, really,
and Visual Studio. I do nothing else on it.
If there's any chance it's out on a console, you'll get it for that.
Yeah.
Won't you?
Yeah. So I don't have enough stuff on that PC to mean that it will break.
It's the Games for Windows for Live specifically that's the pain in the ass. So you're just using it as a shop, as a kind of Steam-alike.
That particular one has none of the integrated stuff. Just a shop.
That's fair enough.
Which makes it a lot easier. Yeah, it's still a brilliant game.
I'd never played it. I sort of sidestepped those. There was a lot of RTSs around that sort of time, and I never really got into that one for some reason.
Oh, they are really good.
I guess by the time you listen to this, it won't be for 10
No, days. That was couple of weeks ago.
Oh, right.
And I just finished downloading it. Cause
I must get around to purchasing that thing I purchased.
Yeah, I must get around to downloading that thing because it needs the game for Windows client loaded. Ooh. And I don't have that loaded always.
Well, so, I'll be quite interested to hear your experiences over the coming weeks with that. Games for Windows Live, you might have the sole satisfied customer with it.
I wouldn't say satisfied. I'd say not pissed off.
Ah, hooray! It isn't annoying.
And then this morning, I was playing a bit of Star Trek Online.
Oh, okay.
Because there's none of that weekly missioning going on.
We're between seasons.
We're between seasons, and we're just before a big patch.
So now's the time to catch up with anything you've missed previously, I guess.
I've got no reason to log in. But I logged in, but I logged in on the test server.
Oh, okay.
Because I wanted to play with the Foundry.
Foundry. Oh, this is their mission creator, is it?
The mission creator, yes.
Interesting.
And I was having fun with that. Yeah. I made myself a nice little space mission.
Okay.
Where I had to go to space and then blow up some Borg.
Are you NDA'd on that?
Oh, God knows.
All right, let's talk about
it. I doubt
anyway.
It. It's a public beta in on their test server.
Right. So so basically what? You get a system. I mean, I don't quite understand how missions work in the normal sense in the main game. Is it just sort of obvious kill 10 rats, go here, deliver this?
I haven't pushed it to see how far it can go and whether or not you can do the puzzles and whatnot. Mm. But the kill missions, which I tried, you... on the Earth Star Dock, the mission I did, I slipped to one of the NPCs on it and gave him a new mission, which sent me into space to go kill a group of Borg ships. Okay. So I just wanted something simple to see how it worked.
Yeah, try the system.
So I did that, and you go over to the NPC, talk to him, your mission text comes up. It fast-travelled me to the space in the sector where I needed to be. Which I'd slipped from a massive list of areas of space.
Okay.
And then I shot the Borg. Brilliant. Then I started playing. You can make any of the NPCs, whether they be ships or people, look like other things.
Okay.
So I reskinned the Borg to look like a galaxy saucer and a galaxy engineering section.
It would have Borg combat stats.
Yeah, it's a Borg
looks
weapons,
like an Enterprise,
you know, disguised as the Enterprise.
Okay,
And that worked.
Yeah. Just the ability to make things look like other things grants you a massive amount of flexibility right there, I'd imagine.
It
you
looks
can
quite
type
promising.
In mission text, can
all the text is editable.
Oh, that's good.
You can have ground missions and space missions and combinations of.
Presumably it's not right in their coding sort of thing. It's all driven.
There's basically a flow chart gets built.
Okay.
A linear one where you.
Because that's a very important thing with mission design, is it's a programming job, basically.
Yeah.
So if you're going to start putting mission editors in for
it's a content design job.
I suppose. But, you design the system, but then you still need a meaningful way to interact with it from just a Joe Public playing the game, So the UI isn't too confusing.
No, it seems relatively straightforward. And quite powerful. I don't know how deep it's going to get.
Yeah.
And it is nice seeing...
Well, you'll get the old, Sturgeon's Law apply, obviously, very quickly.
Which one's that?
That's the 90% of everything is rubbish.
Oh, yes.
The sort of signal-to-noise ratio. This is something that happened with the architect in City of Heroes. It's basically, sounds a broadly similar kind of thing, but most of it's rubbish, but you'll end up with, effectively, 50 new content designers who everyone gets to know and use their content.
Yeah, I can see that.
50 of the best people.
I can see every episode being remade.
Yeah. Oh, God, of course, yeah. And multiple times as well by different people.
Yeah. I'm quite excited about
what the search tools and the reviewing system like.
It is very, very, very pre-finished beta.
There you go.
There doesn't appear to be any searching
yet. That's the big problem
I could see.
Personally, I found with the architect system in City of Heroes was that very quickly you end up with an uncountable number of missions of all of very similar criteria, perhaps with maybe three different things you can search them on. And it just got to the point where you might as well just look at the top starred ones because you're never going
to
find
them. There'll be
word
of mouth to the Star Trek Online sites, though, and they'll report the good ones, I'm
hopefully sure. There'll be some sort of mini reviews coming up.
And a show like Stoked, for instance, will cover it, I'm sure.
Also, I suppose a good mechanism just to make little things for your friends to play.
Yeah.
Guild members, fleet members, whatever they call them.
Yeah, I'm really quite excited by what I've seen.
It's the sort of feature I can't possibly find overall fault with. It's obviously
going to be,
a good
there's
idea.
There's going to be implementation issues, because
there'll be bugs.
And there's going to be limitations that it can't quite do because it needs a bit more power than it's got.
Mm.
Like, you can't quite script this.
The game couldn't possibly be made better by not having it,
Exactly. You only really need one really good player-made mission to justify having it.
Yeah. And it just broadens... It's a whole new dimension of content, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it expands the amount of content you've potentially got ahead of you dramatically.
More things to do. Well, there's like a million missions in there. Go and have a look.
Yeah.
If you're out of real stuff to do.
I'm really quite enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I need to actually try and make something a bit more deep than talk to guy A, blow up chips. Well,
We should turn it into a podcast feature.
Oh, God.
We'll play through it on the show one week.
Stoked, which is a video podcast for Star Trek Online, have been having competitions where people suggest what the episode is and the plot, and they make them for them.
Mm. Excellent.
We're not doing that, by the way. That's a dumb idea. That means work.
Well, that's part of it. It's essentially a kind of craft profession, isn't it? Sitting there tinkering with the mission editor. It means you're not actually playing, but it's a different way of playing, different sort of hobby.
And there's enough people who want to do it, and Star Trek's an IP which really supports it. And the best bit is, it's got a massive list of what you can and can't do at the start, and what you can do, you can use all these properties. Bob, all of Star Trek.
Well, there we go. Well, you're not using it for profit, are you?
So. Oh, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to put websites in. You're not allowed to advertise. You're not allowed to have racialist stuff. You're not allowed to have hate speech.
Yeah, that's all very well, but how are they policing that? That's the trouble with the user, letting the users have a go at making stuff. There's always going to be one joker in there who amuses himself with swastikas.
There will be reports to...
as long as report buttons, all that sort of thing,
That problem in user-generated content has been solved multiple times now by different games, I think.
Yeah, if nothing else, just do what the architect does in City Hall. Yes. Broadly similar.
Yes, I'm really quite enthusiastic about
that.
And I guess that's it for the games I've played.
Right, okay. We failed to do a Twitter question again, didn't we?
Before we stop those.
We're not doing them anymore. Good. No, well, that's why we failed.
We're not doing them anymore until we can come up with some new original ideas.
Right.
Because we're completely
burnt original out. Ideas this week, sorry. So what did you learn this week?
I learned that the A-Team movie is quite possibly the worst CG I've ever seen in a film, and I include movies of the week on sci-fi in that.
Wow.
I include episodes of Xena and Hercules in that.
Mm. And I learned how little snow it takes to paralyse our nation. Really, grow a backbone, all you Brits.
It's true.
Get some snow chains.
There's hardly ever any snow, and the roads were clear.
Get a spade out. So many news reports with, just passers-by and members of the public whining about how little salt, how the council didn't manage to salt every single road in 24 hours in the country.
Get a spade!
Where's the Blitz spirit?
Work together!
We didn't forge this great island nation with snowdrifts like that.
My road complained to the council, and we got a gritting bucket.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, get out there, get a spade, sort yourselves out.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
You might have just alienated people who are still snowed in, It's okay here now.
I am saying this from North Hampshire, yes.
Where we got off really lightly.
We got about an inch, which didn't really freeze.
And the roads were perfectly gritted and clear.
Yeah, still about two-thirds of everyone in the county called in on a snow day, though, judging by the motorway.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
So with that meteorological bombshell, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.